Cookies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
How you doing?
Is that your thing now?
I don't know. Please don't
make that your thing.
I don't know. We've got such a heavy topic today that
it's true.
We needed some form of levity.
This is our 2016 retrospective, which you already know because you've seen the title.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's some shit. But first, our icebreaker. We are, as Ryan put in the notes, fortunate sons.
Our fortunate sons.
Yes. So we each have a fortune cookie from my Chinese order earlier in the weekend, and we're going to crack the fortunes.
I'm trying to do it in such a way that I'm not going to get crumbs everywhere.
Apologies for your ears.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, come on. There we go.
Put the cookie down here for now.
Because we'll be good and we will not eat it on air.
Into your skulls.
Yeah.
If you're wearing headphones. All right, Ryan, what you got?
Not the French side. Okay. Wow, this is actually kind of relevant to me on a personal level. Do not be intimidated by the eloquence of others. This actually, surprisingly, and I guess this is the beauty of fortunes and astrology, is that if you say something sufficiently vague enough, it'll hit true. But actually, this is strange. So,
are you intimidated by my eloquence, Ryan?
A little bit. When I was in grade 8 and grade 9, I had one time complained to my parents how everybody else seemed better at math and smarter, and they were using words that I didn't understand. And I really looked up to some of my peers. And then two short years later, my stepmom was chastising me that I was talking over everybody's heads, which is it alienates other people from me. But it's really funny. I often feel intimidated by, just the beauty and prose of how other people speak. And I have a funny wedding venue story that I could share some other time.
Hmm.
About a guy who had an interesting turn of phrase. So this is a remarkably good fortune for me.
Well, mine was, you will become more and more wealthy. Thanks, fortune.
I mean, as long as you don't bet it all on red, I suppose, and save, you will become more and more wealthy.
Sure.
Or this will be the year where you get more friends if you leave your house.
Fair?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I have all the friends I can handle.
That is true. Internet friends do count.
If there's a limited amount. It's like, did you ever play Chrono Cross?
My brother loved it. I never got around to
it. So, like, the issue with games like Chrono Cross or Final Fantasy is, Final Fantasy VI was a really good example of this,
mm-hmm.
where you play it, and you're like, I got, like, 14 characters. But I don't really know any of them, and I can only have 4 in my party.
Yeah.
So, sooner or later, other ones start being left at home. I'm not going to say my party is full, but...
Yeah.
Because that's mean, but... My, there's definitely some... my character roster's filling up. So yeah, this is our 2016 retrospective thing,
mm-hmm.
and I guess we start with our personal, like, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we did a live podcast at Maker Expo,
yeah,
which was great.
Mm-hmm.
We launched the website,
mm-hmm.
which I need to update.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Scotland.
We did. We took the show on the road internationally.
Yes, yes.
And visited with a good friend. But since we're on the podcast, we might as well highlight the fact that we now have an international podcast.
Yep. And TJ will be making an appearance this season, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like me, personally, I made a bunch of videos. I went to Convergence and was on a bunch of panels.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a whole ton of music. I started streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
You got a new guitar?
I got a new guitar, which hasn't actually seen the light of day very often. Actually, that's not true. It's in all of the Christmas videos.
Mm.
That is a new guitar. And if you go to my channel and look at the music stream, you get 2 hours of me
noodling around on it. And I think our next music stream will be probably maybe once a month, because it was really fun, although really stressful.
I bet.
How about you? I mean, apart from Scotland, and I mean, you got engaged.
Yeah, 2016 was actually a pretty good year for me. 2016 started off in a kind of a bad place. Just I didn't feel very good about myself, and I kind of, without making explicit resolutions to improve myself, the theme of the year for me was improve myself. And so, yeah, I mean, I ended the year getting engaged. I didn't get a promotion at work explicitly. That'll come this year, but my duties and responsibilities...
My inevitable rise to power.
Yeah, but I did get an increase of duties and responsibilities at work, which is that now justifying the promotion that'll come later on. I did make a kind of explicit resolution to read more, because in the previous year I found I'd only read 2 books.
Did you read a lot of books?
This year I read 43 books.
I read like 15.
Yeah. But just like any increase above 2 was impressive to me. And I of course did that, you know, physical copies, audio books and whatnot. I purchased books, library books and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, read 43 books, which is probably more than I read it throughout my entire time in undergrad and grad school, because I didn't read a lot. What else? We have Scotland. I started vlogging. I did the personal vlog every day thing. So none of them are public facing yet, but...
one day.
Perhaps one day. So yeah, vlogged every day. I started my own website and started blogging there. Yeah, we'll link it down there. I went to a bunch of shows last year, so I saw Trivium here in Kitchener finally, and the big reason why I went to that show is because I knew the guys in the opening band, so I was supporting my friend's music.
I was about to ask you if you went to the Steel Panther show, and then I remembered that you didn't.
Yeah.
Because I didn't either, because it was the night before we left for Scotland.
Yeah, so we missed that show. I did see Killswitch Engage again. I saw Black Sabbath again. And I went up, I did a weekend trip to Ottawa to go see Mumford & Sons with Sarah. What else? I became the treasurer of the board that I'm on. And then the other big thing, which we'll talk about in a future podcast, is I started teaching. I started teaching philosophy courses at the college. So
jealous.
Yeah. So this year has, or this year, last year now, has been a pretty good year for me. I mean, it just, a lot of things move forward.
So to throw all that in perspective, I mean, last year was a pretty... I feel like using the word awful in the context of the world disrespects a bunch of other years.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not great.
No.
I mean, we are not a politics or news podcast. We're not, you know, any of that stuff. But I mean, Standing Rock and Brexit and Syria, you know, and the ongoing refugee crisis. Mm. You know, all kinds of public terrorism, like Pulse, the Charleston shooting, innumerable other ones. There was a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what I went into this with, like, maybe having a thing to say about it, but it's also one of those things where so much has been said about it.
Mm-hmm.
That anything I could add, or I think that I could add, has already been said.
Well, and said by people who are far more informed and far more articulate.
Yeah, we'll throw some links in the show notes.
Yeah, there's not really a lot. There's not really a lot that you and I can say as Canadians about things happening elsewhere in the world. I mean, there are things that happen here in Canada that I suppose we could talk about, but I mean,
like, the election was my big one.
Mm-hmm.
That was where, like, I remember the week after the election when all I did was, like, I was super weird. I just, like, wrote songs and, like, went to work and wandered around, and
We canceled one of our podcasts. Well, we didn't cancel the release date. Well,
we canceled the filming, yeah.
Yeah, we decided we were originally going to do kind of a two-parter going into the election and discussing the election results. And just when we came together to film that
We're like, yeah, I can't fucking bear to talk about
it. Yeah, neither of us were in any mood to pontificate on it.
I revised... I have an amount of money budgeted for like giving it away to charity, and I increased that amount and revised where I'm spending it. So rather than, even rather than supporting local charities, I shifted a bunch into stuff like the Trevor Project, Black Lives Matter, like groups that are going to in the next presumably 4 years need to fight for their rights more intensely. And I also budgeted a bunch for supporting creators that I favor, specifically indigenous artists, people of color, queer people, things like that. It's one of those things where I never thought about buying somebody's art as part of my charity budget, and it's kind of not like, I mean, but I don't get a receipt, and at the same time I don't get, I get a piece of art out of it, but there is an amount of solace in finding creators that I like and helping them pay their bills, especially in times when they are struggling. Mm-hmm. And thinking about it that way, because I find that often when I'm just like, I'm rarely like, oh, I'm gonna buy some art. I mean, I have a lot of art, but I'm. It's one of those things where I'm always like, well, do you really? And the answer to that is, this is now a relevant factor, is that, like, people are going to struggle. Mm-hmm. And they can't all move to Australia.
No.
And the notion that artists make better art when they struggle seems awful to me. Like, it is true that I also make good art when I am struggling, but I don't know that it's better in the same way that I don't know that I make better art when I'm being stabbed with knives.
Yeah.
Like, well, let us not squeeze people with suffering in order to get to squeeze out drops of their greatness. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, like I revised I sent a bunch of money to Standing Rock because I'm in a position to do so, and in a position where I'm like, this is a thing that I need to commit more than words to.
Mm-hmm. My revision on commitment came in the form of supporting journalism.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, so I took out a. There's one that I have contributed to, and then there's another one that a new contribution has been made, but it wasn't my wallet. So I made the choice to get a subscription to The Economist. I read a post on Medium that one of the inevitable consequences of... one of the contributing factors to the election coverage or the proliferation of fake news or anything of that nature is that, we've stopped funding quality journalism. And so I was persuaded by that to get a subscription to The Economist. And then for Christmas, I requested a subscription to The New Yorker.
Hmm.
So those are two. I still haven't gotten around to the newspaper side of it. I think it's just because I read the paper daily at work as part of my job. And so that kind of impetus for the daily news or local news isn't quite as pressing for me. But my contributions may not be directly to people, but my contribution, I was persuaded, and according to my values and the kind of goals that I want, took me into that direction.
Yeah, this is the other thing. I shifted, like, around Christmas, I shifted my gift stuff, where instead of buying people stuff, I made donations to charity. Mm-hmm. My office Secret Santa. Mm-hmm. And I got them to do the same. Mm-hmm. I remember I put a note in my thing where I was just like, listen, dear Secret Santa, I'm not really a big stuff haver. Make a donation to, you know, the Trevor Project or Planned Parenthood or the ACLU or mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter. And that'll be cool and we'll be cool and it'll be great. Mm-hmm. And they did. And it was wonderful. They also, I think, they bought me a pack of magic cards.
There's got to be some small toy.
I have a pack of Kaladesh. Yeah. No, I mean, I got my Secret Santa a donation to Ducks Unlimited and a YouTube playlist of cute ducky videos. So, you can find that playlist on my channel. It has a whole bunch of adorable ducky videos. But it was super dorky. But yeah, like there is a notion of things shifting. Mm-hmm. Like the biggest one is I think the biggest one from our perspective is the American election, which seems weird to me in the sense that as Canadians the biggest ones are the myriad environmental confrontations going on around Canada. You know, our federal government sort of backpedaling on a bunch of things, you know, approving pipelines.
The election reforms.
Yeah. Backpedaling on election reform. Like Canada does it in its own, like, quiet brand of trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's interesting to watch a government. Actually, I guess it's not that interesting on account of it that has been every like government in Canada where you're watching a federal government that's like, yes, we wish to reconcile with First Nations people. No, we haven't asked them about these pipelines. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have approved the pipelines. Mm-hmm. What do you mean they're upset? We're just kidding, we didn't ask them. So the next year or so here is, like, the last year has been an interesting sort of bit of dancing and lip service, and the next year looks to be more of that. Mm-hmm. But the American election, I mean, I know lots of people in the States, and they are, they're going to have a time. Like, I don't actually think I know anybody ordinary in the States, like, who... And by ordinary, I would be like
say, well, middle. I don't know anybody ordinary. They're all extraordinary.
No, no. So I would classify that as like middle class cishet white people, mm-hmm. who are American citizens. I mean, I probably do. Yeah, I probably do. I can think of maybe one. But, like, no, most of the people I know, I mean, shockingly, are queer, or people of color, or indigenous, or they are artists, or they are women, or they're in groups that are openly threatened by their new government. You know, there's already moves to defund Planned Parenthood from all the health work that it does. There's moves to declare protests illegal. It's gonna be a time. And the thing that strikes me is that the only thing that's remarkable about that is the fact that it's happening here. Mm-hmm. Like if this were, I don't know, the Republic of the Congo. People would be people are still writing think pieces, but they'd be, you know, and they'd be sort of stroking beards and nodding heads and being like, well, you know, it's, and like, no, this is here. And suddenly everybody's like, well, oh, this is really upsetting. I'm like, ah, imagine how the rest of the world felt when this kind of shit happened. Mm-hmm. So... I mean, this is, I guess, the year when we find out how that shakes out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you said last... Well,
so,
in our last retrospective, you said you coined 2015 as, you know, the year people found out.
Yeah. I mean, that was the year when it was undeniable things like police violence, like racialized police violence, mm-hmm. became undeniable. Mm-hmm. Things like the constant threat of of mass shootings in the United States, the rise of sort of conservatism, and the threat that that poses to civil rights, to women's rights, to LGBT rights. Like that is stuff that became unquestionably clear in 2015. Mm-hmm. And 2016, you called it in our pre-show the year of the bystander.
Yeah, I mean, I wrestled a little bit with different ways of trying to capture a mental image that I had. Because originally I said, like, the year we were tempered by fire, but I was like, and you pointed out rightfully, it's like, no, that's not quite it. I'm like, no, we're more like the lobster that the heat's been turned up and we didn't realize it until it's too late. But then I think the perfect way to say it is in the context of the bystander effect, is that it just, this year was the year of the bystander. I think...
We will write think pieces while Rome burns.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, I think it also, there could have been an element of it that, we'll take the election as, like, the American election as kind of that tipping point really late in the year. And that there was a lead up to it of a series of events that was going on the other side of the world, so to speak. Like, specifically, we'll say, like, Brexit in this case, because that mm-hmm. was, like, the big one that preceded it. But we keep looking, and you've already alluded, or you've already explicitly stated it, that up until the election in the United States, everybody in the northwestern hemisphere kept looking at the rest of the world and kind of, you know, laughing at it, dismissing it, oh, these silly people, that'll never happen here. And then suddenly we get to the end of the year, where it happens here. And it's almost like, when you look at it retrospectively, it's like, of course it was going to happen here. Why would we be any different, kind of deal?
Yeah.
And then after the election, things just kept getting bad. Like, this is the election was November 9th, I think?
Yeah.
So from November 9th until the end of the year, like, what happened in Syria just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Like, Aleppo and other areas there where there was fighting between the government forces and the rebel forces, and like the Facebook live streaming or live broadcasting and live messages of people saying goodbye from Aleppo, kind of mm-hmm. like that happened right around what, the second or third week of December, if I remember correctly,
a little before that, but yeah
so
like it was ongoing.
But I mean, like, up until the American election, it seemed, and then that kind of shock and awe that happened for two or three weeks afterwards when people were trying to figure out what the hell happened, that was that where the bystander effect kept being like, oh, we don't have to worry about it because, you know, Bernie's going to win the nomination on the Democratic side. And when it didn't happen, okay, Clinton's going to mop the floor. Like, epic rap battles, for example, there was kind of an implied sense in there in which yep. Hillary was going to win. Like, why would we expect it to happen otherwise? And then suddenly it didn't. And now we're left with this kind of feeling of, like, how did this happen? How could we let this happen? How did we stand by and watch it happen? And trying to figure that out in some sense. And now, obviously, there's a lot of communities who've been heralding this is coming, whether or not it was Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. or Standing Rock, who were there like, yeah, we've been saying this all along. Thanks for catching up with the conversation.
Yeah.
So, like, the entire conversation or the entire point that I'm making right now is obviously from a certain perspective. But that bystander effect of the mainstream consciousness is finally caught up with the reality of the kind of suffering that's going on a more macro scale. So,
well, I think that it's a necessary consequence of the world sort of becoming more interconnected. But at the same time, there is a tendency to... there's a couple of different ways to structure that. Like, part of it, I think, is that the idea of, like, doing less or not doing things is the same as doing them or doing or like it amplifies the effect.
Mm-hmm.
Or the effect that we perceive. So the classic example is just changing Facebook photos.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those conversations I always have on coming out day. When everybody changes their Facebook photos to like rainbows and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And like bunches of queer people that I know who aren't out don't change their Facebook photos, and they catch hell
mm-hmm.
from other people for not doing it. They're like, why are you like, it's because reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's one of those interesting examples of the exact thing working against itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's also, I think that like we like one of the things we saw with the election was the rise of fake news. And we talked a bit about the rise of like clickbait and sort of 21st century elections and things like that. And like the era of, we live in the era of the think piece where we have like media infrastructures invested in talking rather than doing. Now, talking is a form of doing. I mean, journalism is both talking and doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I would, this podcast is not journalism.
No.
This is shouting in the dark.
Yeah.
You know?
This is literally the result of me saying, hey, Jim, we have really interesting conversations. Wouldn't it be fun to put a microphone in with us?
Yeah.
Like there's no
the distinction. Like journalism is not art, this is art.
Yeah.
It's different from journalism.
Yeah.
Journalism teaches you things in more direct ways.
We hope just to not waste your time for 20 to 30 minutes.
Or to waste your time enjoyably. But the point is
don't regret.
Yeah, like we've built these sort of we've created these sort of structures where it is useful or profitable to engage in that sort of I will use the term circle jerk, where we spend a bunch of time talking about something and nothing ever happens. I think it's a Robert Frost quote. He wrote it about writing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, writing is a faucet in the house. Talking is a hydrant in the yard. And I would make the same argument about doing. It is hard to it is I think important to strike a balance between doing and talking about doing. I think it's important to talk about doing because it helps other people find ways to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some really, really cool stuff going around even in just the past 2 months, where people are sharing scripts that they're using to call legislators. There's a really good post on how to call your legislators when you have social anxiety. And it's like how to work through that and how to develop a process for that, where, you know, here is how to do something that is real,
mm-hmm.
that has consequence. You know, or at least follows the process of things that have consequence. But, you know, there's a bunch of really cool stuff like that. But there's also a bunch of sort of, you know, lots of random think pieces about little tidbits of stuff. And I am as guilty of this as anybody because I have written them. But I do not get paid to write them.
Mm-hmm.
I write them because I am inspired. Sometimes.
Or sometimes there's value in writing the think piece to work something through.
Mm-hmm.
Like work something out.
There's definitely
journaling therapeutically in that regard.
Yeah. And that is an interesting way to think about it, I think, is journaling.
Hmm.
As opposed to, you know, reporting. And I think that we have definitely entered a stage where it's easy to confuse those two, and I don't have any good advice on telling them apart.
No, there's a couple think pieces talking about how colleges need to create critical thinking courses in the post-truth era.
We have finally...
Or post-fact, sorry.
We have gone meta.
Yeah, no, sorry, post-fact, because post-truth and post-truthiness was the mid-2000s.
But, yeah, and I think that those contribute to the notion of bystander. It's like, by knowing things, I have done things. Mm-hmm. Like, even if the things that I have learned are true, by knowing them, I have done them. Or have done something. And the answer, I think, is that we haven't. This is going to be a struggle that happens with our money. This is going to be a struggle that happens with our feet. This is going to be a struggle that happens with our hearts and our compassion, not just in our ability to feel for and empathize with others, but in our ability to extend charity and hospitality to those people and to people in need. And that, I think, is going to test us. We have a little note for our prediction of 2017, which is the year of bystander no more, where we realize that no one is a bystander. Everything is interconnected and we have an obligation to each other to help each other persevere and thrive and flourish. What's the Aristotelian word for flourishing?
Eudaimonia.
Ah, I knew you'd know. I couldn't remember, and I knew you'd know. Yeah. And
what? Aristotle.
But 2016, it was a beast of a year. It was the year our idols died, and we had to become the people that they knew we have always been. And 2017, I think, will answer the question of what kind of people are we? Mm-hmm. Shit's getting real dark.
Why don't you share with us your 2016 in the comments? Because we need a way to cap this off. So if you had a great year, or if you had a terrible year, why don't you share what you're comfortable sharing in the comments down below?
Ultimately, send it to Huck on Twitter at RJHuckle.
Yeah.
Or to me at Concept Crucible.
Yeah, I don't spend enough time on Twitter, so if you tag
me... I spend way too much time on Twitter.
If you tag me on Twitter, I'll find my way on
2016, definitely the year I learned to fucking love Twitter and why I love Twitter. Spoilers, Zoe Quinn is my favorite part of Twitter. Yeah, your hopes, your dreams, your think pieces, I look forward to seeing them.
And how is your 2017 shaping up? How do you see it going forward for you? Hit us all up. Let us know.
All right. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And we're signing off.
Stay awesome.
Stay safe. Now we can finally eat these cookies. If someone's wearing headphones, we're eating this inside their head now.
Yep. Not my problem. I'm going to take the 2016 stance, so that's not my problem.
What the fuck, man?
Huck, you learned nothing from this year.
That was too real.
Yep. These are good cookies, though.
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nom, 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 nom.